So we're discussing the issue of Ma'amad Har Sinai. As to, first of all, how do we have knowledge, since this is the foundation of our whole system, our acceptance of Torah. So how do we have knowledge today that the event took place? And the start is, why was the event itself necessary? If you go through the stories, you see that, well, first of all, you see one thing, that at no point in the Torah, at no point, is there any idea that it's meritorious or it's praiseworthy that people should accept that a certain individual is a prophet, or that they should accept that something is from God without proof? Because even before Matan Torah, when God first appeared to Moshe and instructed him to go to Mitzrayim, so Moshe had to hold the bait at the snare, the burning bush. But then Moshe at one point says, "Behem lo yaminu," they won't believe in me. That is to say, and the Rambam discusses this whole thing in the Torah, that first Moshe had to be able to convince them that he had the correct idea of God that they had. That was he asked, "What's your name?" I said, "That's Ekya Asher Ekya." So then he would be able to elucidate the concept, the idea of God that they possessed. But that's not enough. Because that doesn't prove, just because a person, an individual, happens to have the correct notion, the correct idea of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that doesn't prove that God has actually communicated with him. So that's why he said, "Behem lo yaminu." They'll say, "God didn't speak to you." Now, right then and there, you see that there's no idea that people should accept things on the basis of faith. Because God doesn't say to him, "Well, what do you mean? That's it, they should have faith in you." There's no such concept. It's perfectly legitimate. To the contrary, you see that God provides them with actual demonstration. So by doing so, doesn't that establish the idea that people are not expected? It would be wrong for people to simply accept somebody and because of any other factor other than we can demonstrate it. Why should... That idea is at the bottom of what that whole discussion is about. You must produce that. But since God didn't tell Moshe, "Forget, don't worry about that, let's see it down the moon. Let's see it down the moon." And you have to assume also that the knowledge, this idea that the Jews would someday be redeemed from Mitzrayim, that must have been passed down to them. Because that's the message he said, that God is... remember, so to speak, that God has not abandoned you, and God is going to come and save you, and all of that. That was the message he brought to them. That message itself must have resonated with them, must have some, which, you know, they had traditions that they had received. But that didn't mean anything. The question would be, which was a legitimate question, how do we know that God spoke to you, Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe. So, right then and there, the fact God gave you three signs to demonstrate that he was indeed in contact with the Supreme Being, because otherwise how could he be responsible? How could he predict the phenomenon? You want to use the word perform the miracles, but by performing the miracles, he wasn't saying that he had a specific power. It was, as we pointed out many times, the fact that he could predict at what point in time this change in nature would take place. It would mean that he's in contact with the Supreme Being. After that point, you see there's a certain development in terms of the relationship between Moshe and the Jews in the tribe. That they accepted what he said, and they, you know, there's the tide seems to go up and back. When things went badly with Paro, and Paro increased the work, so they turned against Moshe. And that's understandable. But eventually, in the course of the year, it's about a year, approximately a year, that Moshe spent in Mitzrayim, with the Makros, with the weakening of the Mitzrayim, and the complete change in attitude that took place towards the Jews, paying her on, the people had a new respect for the Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim had a new respect for the Jews and Moshe Rabbeinu, and then you see that they rallied behind Moshe. And they had the courage to take the seh when they were commanded to for the Korban Pesach, and to ask the Mitzrayim as they were instructed to for the gifts, to line up to get ready and to actually leave the Yad Rama with the high hand. See, and then all subsequent to that, all the things that took place in the Midbar before Sinai. Moshe had performed other miracles, but it would seem that the most significant of all of them was the miracle of the Kriyas Yamta. And by the way, before that, when God tells them to turn around and go back towards Piyachiros, and it says that the Jews did all of that, so Rashi points out that to teach you there, to compliment them, that's their praise, that in spite of the fact that they were going towards the enemy, they still said, we have nothing except the word of Moshe. That shows that they had fully accepted the idea that Moshe was the Navi of Hashem. So, for all of these reasons, the question then arises, so why wasn't that enough? And then God asked them, sent Moshe to ask them if they wanted to receive the Torah. And they said yes, without condition. Nevertheless, that was not enough. And God said, I'm going to come to you in a thick cloud, thickness of cloud, so that the people will hear. And when I speak with you, and also in you, they will believe la'olah. So that trust itself is giving us the basic objective, the basic purpose of what the Nama, the revelation itself, was all about. I said, the first question is that if we assume that the Jews already believe in God and believe in Moshe, so wouldn't this entire demonstration be superfluous? Now the Rambam explains the reason why it was necessary and what the purpose is. And basically, that it would seem that there are two reasons why the revelation, in which they saw these tremendous sights and sounds and so forth, everything which they perceived to be supernatural phenomena, things that could not have been arranged, orchestrated by people, and most significant, they heard the voice of God from heaven. They heard a voice from heaven, which they were convinced was not a human voice, and it was commanding them in these ideas, in these mitzvahs. So there are two factors. One factor is that a person who believes on the basis of miracles, that belief in and of itself is not perfect, so to speak. The Ramzi is sort of like Yesh Acharei Hiru. It's not completely convincing. It has an effect. You see, it's not to be completely dismissed, because on the basis of these miracles, the Jews did follow Moshe Rabbeinu. But, which means to say, it's rational, that if you were in that situation, and Moshe had performed these various miracles, so it would make sense to follow, which the Jews did. But, in terms of giving the Torah, and producing an absolute conviction, so miracles, even the greatest of them, seem to be lacking something, and that was one of the reasons why Ma'amon Har Sinai is going to provide, is going to restore that which would be lacking in ordinary miracles. Miracles, in general, while they make a very powerful impact upon a person, generally speaking, they don't produce anything which is lasting. Because you have to understand there's a lot of resistance in the human psyche. There's a lot of resistance. And after time, you can sort of like rationalize what this does. Because it depends upon a certain type of an association. You never really, it doesn't satisfy the mind completely, because you're just making a certain assumption that this is not a coincidence. That you were in a desperate situation and had given up all hope, and then a certain event had occurred. So you're making a certain deduction, that therefore there must be a God and so on and so forth. But you never really get direct access to that. That's by inference. It's an inference that the mind makes. And it's a correct inference, and it's logical. Actually. You don't know if it's correct. You don't know if it's correct, but it's logical. Given all the circumstances, so. Given those circumstances, if you were in a situation like that, where you were facing tremendous danger of your being overwhelmed by enemy forces, and then somebody came along and told you not to worry, everything will be okay, you will see, in 1 hour's time, there's going to be an earthquake on that side, and it will be consumed, you know, that type of thing. If you were to see all of that, there's no question that it will make a tremendous impact upon you, and if you function purely intelligently, you assume, you say you do less. It doesn't make sense to assume that it's a chance phenomenon, and you would deduce, therefore, that there must be a supreme, there must be this, there must be this, there must be that. But don't you understand, that depends upon a person who's very, very rational, but because of the fact that you have to make all of those steps, and those steps that you're making are not things that you are witnessing directly, you're not witnessing the underlying cause behind it, that because of the way the psyche is structured emotionally, it leaves room for doubt, so that when other emotions come to the fore, and now you have desires, which would be contrary to the truth that you'd have to live by if all of those deductions were actually true. So then you see the emotions begin to overpower a person. Yeah, well, you know, who knows? Maybe it was a coincidence. Maybe this person knew about the geological factors. Even though that is irrational, even though it would be irrational, not that way, because you should, whatever is the logical conclusion, whatever the logical conclusion should be, is one that you should actually live by. But the nature of Adam is that he doesn't do that. He doesn't do that, and when there is a powerful urge to act in accordance with certain instincts, and however, there's another part of him which is saying, no, I have to fear God, I'm violating what God has commanded. So then you have the phenomenon of the rationalization and the distortion factor beginning to turn. You see how people can distort reality. So there is a difference then between a situation where you arrive at the idea of a supreme being through certain inferences, as opposed to where you come in direct contact. That is, the supreme being manifests itself directly, and if you're not basing yourself on the fact that how could this event occur unless there was a supreme being? You're face to face. That's what Moshe tells the Jews in the Vermont. God spoke to you directly. And that's the appeal. The appeal of the Torah really rests on this, that you must keep the Torah because you have direct knowledge that it was given to you by God. Nowhere does Moshe ever appeal to the Jews to keep the Torah because you just should have faith. No, it says that not just our fathers, but we ourselves. That's the idea, in my opinion, that all the Jews, the souls of all the Jews around Sinai, means to say that God created this event, and it was worked out in such a way that it would provide absolute proof that the Torah comes from God, not just for those people who witnessed it. So that's step one. Step one is you need to know why it is that it was necessary for those people who witnessed it when they had witnessed so many other miraculous phenomena. In evaluating what the Jews actually witnessed, at Sinai, they witnessed supernatural phenomena. They witnessed supernatural phenomena, and they heard a voice which they were convinced, whoever was there would have been convinced, came from God, addressing them, that this is my will. This is the, I am the Lord your God. So therefore that teaches you all these vital points. I'll get into what we do. We do the actual exercise of biblical, we'll go into the idea of what the concept is. But bear in mind that even today, I don't think it's possible to have such a spectacle, to get an entire nation, millions of people, and have a situation where they themselves would walk away convinced that they just had an encounter with the supreme being. And this is in the age of technology. See, people have a tremendous... You'll understand why there's a significance. The importance of this proof is, even upon hearing this proof, you see how people rationalize and try to distort it and try and spin it around and negate its significance. Oh, well, you know, this is a few thousand, maybe they were so primitive, maybe, you know, like they were frightened, maybe there was really a volcano, all that kind of stuff. See, first of all, you have to realize, I don't think that modern technology could create a thing like this. Today, with all the technologies that we have, you could not take people and convince them that they had, because people would, that they had witnessed something. You know, you can make all kinds of fireworks and displays and so on and so forth, but people witnessing it would know, would be able to recognize that this is a production. But certainly in those days, they didn't have that kind of capacity. There was no technology. So nobody could do it. You read the story in the Torah itself. So a lot of people say, oh, of course, I mean, if I was there, of course I would, those people that were there, yeah, of course, but I'm not there. But if you read the description of what actually transpired, and you put yourself in that situation, and you still would not be convinced, so then there's nothing to be said. I mean, the Torah is not speaking to a person like that. This is that would imply that such an individual was like, you know, had some kind of a distortion. Could not. A person that was there, that was at Sinai and witnessed what he witnessed and heard what he heard and said and just negated it, that person you know, has had the problem. That's to read the description in the Varm, the people were clearly convinced that it came from God, because then they say they got emotion. They say we can't, if we continue, now we see that a person can hear the voice of God and live. That's what they say to Moshe Rabbeinu. And then they say, now you go, and if we continue to hear this, then we'll die. They were afraid that they would die, because it could do such a powerful impact upon them. To be in that state of proximity to God was such that they can only bear so much. And they said, now that's it, it's fulfilled its objective. That is, now we don't need to be hearing the Torah anymore directly from God. We have absolute conviction that you, Vidam Mechayam, really are them, that you're the one. Because they saw that Moshe was unique, that God addressed himself to Moshe, and Moshe went into the Arafel, and so forth. So that was another one of the objectives. There were two objectives. One is that the Torah comes, the second one is Gam Mechayam, that God is not going to come to the Jews every day with messages. It's going to be through the ones who he has determined, his chosen ones, so to speak, the Nevi'im, and then followed by the Baalei HaMasorah, all the other Nevi'im, and the Baalei HaMasorah, and so on and so forth. But God established a system by which the Jews would constantly be receiving, you know, his prophecy, the message that God wanted them to have, and also the interpretation, the legitimate interpretation. And you see that was fulfilled, because in Devarim Moshe tells them that you came to me and you, that's it, you, so to speak, had enough. The first objective then was that the people itself should base their acceptance of the Torah not merely on the fact that miraculous phenomena have been performed, but rather direct communication from the Supreme Being. The second point that's made by the Rambam and the Ramban also is that by establishing the foundation this way, the Jews, as opposed to miracles, the Jews were thereby protected against the possibility of a false prophet. Now, a false prophet ever coming along and undermining the foundations of Yahadus. That is to say, if our acceptance of the veracity of Torah was based upon the fact that the one who gave it to us was able to perform miracles. So we accept it because of the miracles that he performed. So then there's a portion of the Torah that warns against the false prophet. That if a prophet should ever arise, another shekhar, and he tells you something which is contrary to Torah, that God is commanding you to do something which is contrary to Torah. Now, let's assume that he performs great miracles. So you question him, you doubt him, and so you're not just going to accept it. And you tell him, well, we can't believe you because we accept the Torah because we know the Torah comes from God, so you have to be false. So let's say it was based upon miracles. The foundation was just miracles. So then he would say, well, how do you know that what you were told then is true? And you would say, well, because of the miracle. So then Sarah performed miracles too. So let's say for whatever reason he's able to perform miracles. So now you'd be in a real dilemma. Because how do you know that the Torah of Moshe is to be accepted over him? Let's assume that his miracles are equally impressive. Let's assume he can split a sea. Or whatever it is you want to put him to the test. Now the Torah maintains that a thing like that is possible. But the rest, how is it possible? There's no human being. Either a person is tremendously gifted and can create illusions and fool you. That's one possibility. That somebody should develop this tremendous skill of making something appear. And today, with, you know, illusions, they can really create these kinds of impressions. Or else it's possible that God is testing you. That's what the Rambam says. So God is testing you. So that it is possible that a false prophet, should arise and try to dissuade us or try to convince us, seduce us into some type of a practice which would be contrary to Torah. It could be something which would be idolatrous. That we should make some kind of an image and put it up in the synagogues, and not to pray to an image, but we should have that thought in mind when we do it through. Something which would be on the verge of idolatry, whatever the case, which would be totally, absolutely contrary to Torah. Now, if the foundation of Torah itself was, we believed it because the one who gave it to us performed the miracles, so now you'd be in a state of tremendous vulnerability. Because if somebody else should ever come along and create the same type of miracles, or entrust us that he had created the same type of miracles, with a message which is contrary, so then how would you know who to follow? You could not refute the false prophet. It wouldn't make any sense. Why would he be a false prophet? Maybe the first prophet is false, because they both could be miracles. It's been. The only reason you believe the first one is because of miracles. Now, he did miracles. So the first one says that that what the second person is saying is false. Yeah, but by the same token, the second one is saying that God never commanded that. So you'd be stuck. So the Rambam compares this to a case, the case of witnesses, of Abraham. Well, the Torah commands us that we have to decide cases on the basis of Abraham. And of course you have to go through all the interrogations and so on and so forth to make sure they're not lying. But once the witnesses have passed the test, the interrogations, so then you have to accept the testimony and you have to decide the case on the basis of their testimony. But does that mean to say that just because you weren't able to break them down and they passed the test of the breach of Hakira, does that mean that they're telling the truth? No. It's a halacha. It's a halacha because it's possible that they're lying, but they're very adept, they're very skillful, very, very knowledgeable, and they're able to fool the justices, the judges. That's why if the second pair of witnesses comes along and contradicts the first, so then you don't know who's telling the truth. You have to throw the case out. However, the only person that would be in such a situation that, let's say he accepted something and acted on the basis of testimony of witnesses, which was thoroughly investigated and so forth, and then he was convinced on that basis, and therefore they put a certain person in jail or whatever, they executed the person, whatever the case may be. Then you have two witnesses come along and testify to something the exact opposite. They contradict the testimony of the first. So now, assuming that you use the same methods of interrogation with the second pair, you're in a situation of that. You have no way of knowing. Okay? That would be the same situation if we accepted Moshe on the basis of miracles. So with regard to that, we'd be just as vulnerable if somebody else came along with miracles and had a totally different message. We wouldn't know which message is true anymore, because he only accepted the first message because of miracles. But let's say that you you're the judges. It just so happens that you who are the judge, then the two witnesses come, and they testify about something, and you yourself were there. And you yourself were there at that place, in that room, at that time, in that situation, and they claim that one person assaulted another person. So, would you, in this situation, would you accept what they say as being any validity? Just because they're witnesses? No, because you're not going to accept something, someone as a witness, when it contradicts that which you yourself saw with your own eyes. You see? So there's no way in the world, I mean, if hundreds and hundreds of witnesses came and testified about something, and you were there, and you saw it yourself, so then you don't need witnesses, you don't need any proof. You know that what they're saying is false. You automatically would reject them. You wouldn't have to have an interrogation. With these people, you would not have to have an interrogation in order to prove that they're false witnesses, because you know by definition that they're false witnesses, because you were at the event itself. That's the difference over here. That in the first case, the reason why you believe the Torah of Moshe is not because of the miracles that Moshe performed. It's because you know the directly. You know, you have first-hand knowledge that whatever has been commanded comes from God. So this is God's will. So now if somebody else should come along and tell you that God wants something contrary, you say it has to be false, because you heard directly what God wants. All I can perform miracles. So you perform all the miracles you want. It's not, we're not accepting the Torah because of miracles. We're accepting it because we heard it. We know that it's true because we're there ourselves. And you're not going to convince us through an inferior method about something which goes contrary to that which we witnessed ourselves. By establishing the Torah on this basis, it made us no longer vulnerable to the possibility of being seduced by a false prophet. That's why the Torah says that if such a thing should ever occur, and it's possible that there would be a phenomenon of a false prophet, that God is really testing us to see whether you truly love God. That is to say, whether your relationship to God is based upon a firm foundation of idea, of knowledge. Yes, all these things you see is the extent to which the real foundation for our acceptance of Torah is based upon idea. And that the idea, which we produce through miracles, is insufficient. But the Rambam says that Moshe Rabbeinu, the Jews did not believe him because of the Osos that he did. And that's the Rambam talks about this in Historia Torah. Now we're in a position to understand what the necessity, what necessitated the Mama, Mama Hasina. Because it established the conviction that the Torah comes from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that God is the source of the Torah, and that his trusted servant, the one who's trusted, who's Ma'amon, to transmit to us is Moshe Rabbeinu, that he's designated Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore whatever Moshe Rabbeinu tells us in the name of God, we should accept as the Torah. Now we understand why this was all necessary, because it put it on a different level of idea, which was no longer subject to any kind of doubt, and which was no longer subject to any other kind of refutation. Indeed, there's only one possible way. After the Torah was given to him, there'd only be one possible way for any other false prophet. That's why every, so to speak, prophet, all the false prophets of the other religions, whether it's Jesus, whether it's Muhammad, and so forth, all of the other imposters, well, I don't believe that they performed anything worse in terms of miracles. There's no evidence whatsoever that they did anything of significance. But even if they had done so, we would reject them, because we would say to them, we were there. We heard God say that this is the Torah. And, after the Torah is given this way, the question, just throwing out the question in order to obtain an understanding, and the Rambam refers to it in one of his letters. Would it be now conceivable for there to be any type of a way in which we doubt, real doubt, could be established somewhat. Because we see that the whole purpose was to make it really beyond the realm of doubt. It was, I'm showing you again the direction that well, those people want to maintain the faith, simple faith. To the contrary, it's really knowledge, and to the extent where it's a kind of knowledge which does not lend itself to any kind of doubt whatsoever. The only way that we could ever be rendered vulnerable, and it's never happened, no one even tried to do it, is if somebody would come forth and say that it's God's will to aid us. He couldn't say, there's nothing that could make a point that the soul was not given by God. He couldn't do that. The only thing he could say is that it was intended for a time and now there's a change. Which doesn't make sense either, because the Torah itself is very clearly different forever. And why would God the change? If God had the law of the world's purpose, why would it change? How can he prove it? The only way to prove it is then something. You know, the Rambam refers to that. Fine, if you can demonstrate to us in the same way, if you can create the same phenomena that were the foundations for which we accepted. So if you could gather together millions of people. We want to hear directly from God. You see, because when we heard directly from God that this is the Torah, this is God's will. And so that's why we keep the Torah and we can't make any changes, because it comes to us from God.
So how do you know from God?
Because you were there. See now. Now if you're claiming that that was only intended to be temporary, or there's going to change of course now, we go in different directions. So we'll say, well, you have to prove it to us. The only way you can prove it to us could not be through miracles. So you would have to create a situation which is akin, which is analogous to the original situation, and we would hear directly from God, so then we would listen. But you see quite clearly that if nobody remotely ever, with all the deviations that people are sort of introduced into Torah, no one has ever remotely even wanted to get into an arena where he could do any kind of demonstration. The truth of the matter is that there's nobody that we know of that even was able to perform any kind of a miracle that we would give any credence to. And even today, we have a tremendous amount of charlatans in the area of religion in general. Miracles, people have claims to miraculous powers and all of that. Yet, there's nobody that is willing to come forth in an open manner, which the miracles of Moshe Rabbeinu were all performed openly, and we say even those miracles are not sufficient as the ultimate guarantor that the Torah is true. But what you have is, if everything is done hidden, and you have these people that stories are told and projected and exaggeration and so on and so forth, so that of all of these people, and they're all far away, they all have everything in miracles. Miracles to us for everything in the world, but they can't make it public, and they can't do it in front of it's a secret. So what I'm saying is that all of this should be completely rejected. In terms of a real assault on the veracity of Torah, nothing of any true significance has ever been launched. Unfortunately, people in this area are completely irrational. And false religion, which tried to establish their origin in Sina. All the major religions have to go back to Sina, because there's no way that they can make a duplication. There's no way that they can have what we would call a public revelation. That's an impossibility for people to do unless it's real. The phenomenon of a public revelation is impossible to create, and if it does exist, it must be real. Rambam says that the miracles that Moshe performed were not done to establish his veracity, to establish the truthfulness of Torah. Rather, each one was done because of the situation required. That is to say, Kriya Shamsuk was not done to establish the veracity of Moshe Rabbeinu, even though the result of that was that the belief in Moshe Rabbeinu increased. Still, that was not the purpose of the miracle. The purpose of the miracle, it's because of necessity. And that's all the miracles that were performed by Moshe Rabbeinu were done because of a certain necessity. For example, the man, they needed food. So the man was a great miracle. But it wasn't done to establish veracity. And that's where the Rambam learns the pasuk that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu at the very beginning of the dialogue by the snare, by the burning bush. So he said, "Botziach es am Mitzrayim tavdun es holokim alahor azeh." And the Rambam interprets that to mean that the ultimate verification, that what you speak is really true, it comes from God, will be on Sinai. The event at Sinai, therefore, was intended to establish on a level which is beyond miracles. It is not to say that they were impressed by the miracle, which is not to dismiss the significance of a miracle. The Jews did follow Moshe Rabbeinu. On the basis of the fact that he was so nervous, because that's what he asked God, "Hey, may I mean it? But they won't believe in me when I come to them and declare that I'm a prophet." So why should they believe that God spoke to me? So for that, it was necessary to provide him with supernatural phenomena, which indicated that he was connected to a source which is beyond the physical realm. So therefore you can't dismiss miracles. And the point over here is not to dismiss miracles and say they have absolutely no value. They do have a value. And they work because as a result of the miracles, the signs that Moshe performed, and the Jews followed him, and then he went to Pharaoh. And God said, "Well, Pharaoh demands a sign, this is what you should do." And those are the makos. The makos were not just punishments, but they were intended not as punishments, to direct his attention to the fact that there's a supreme being who rules the world with justice. There is then a certain type of an ambivalence over here with regard to miracles. So what are we saying? Is it rational to follow an individual on the basis of miracles? Or isn't it? You can't say that it's irrational. You can't say it doesn't make sense to follow a person on the basis of miracles. You can't dismiss miracles because they're an important element in the shlichus, in the mission of Moshe Rabbeinu. And as we said, that's the way God redressed Moshe's protest. He said, "They won't believe in me. They won't believe that God, why should they believe that God spoke to me?" Which again, you can deduce from that it is not correct, that it's not the will of God, and it's certainly not the position of Torah that people should just believe because of belief without proof. Because Moshe Rabbeinu raised the issue, v'heim lo yaminu, and God did not say that they have to believe in you, tell them that they have to have a miracle, that they have to have faith. There's no concept like that. God accepted it, good point. Even though Chazal criticized on a different level that Moshe spoke that way there for Eretz Yisrael, but they're not Mamim. But that's a different idea, that's on the level of Chazal. Plain shot, Moshe's question was well taken, so to speak. Good point. And then God directs him, gives him three signs. Three signs. One is not enough for time. It's also interesting. See, because when you're establishing yourself on the basis of miracles, there's something lacking in one. Because that itself, I think, would give us a bit of a clue, an opening in terms of understanding the Rambam's position as to why Sinai is necessary. Miracles have a value, but you have to calculate the value of a miracle in terms of the effect. In terms of the effect, there is a person in a certain situation will, provided that the miracle is authentic, convincing, will operate up to a certain point on the basis of the miracle. It does have an effect, but it doesn't produce the kind of lasting effect that's necessary. You see that the Jews didn't accept the Torah on the basis of miracles, but they did follow Moshe Rabbeinu. Bear in mind also that they were in a situation of enslavement, and they wanted to get out of that situation. And to accord him the proper authority and capability of being a leader, so the miracles had that effect. But when it comes to Torah, it's more than just that. It's more than just accepting the Torah or agreeing to follow the Torah. It's having a certain conviction, an absolute conviction that the Torah is necessary. And here is where the Rambam says that the miracle is not 100%. It does not satisfy the mind completely, because there's always room for doubt. Because I think that would explain why, even in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, that God gave him three. Because that's also a factor. It shows you there's a certain doubt. If there was no doubt, if the miracle was absolutely convincing, so why would God have to give him more than one? It's just a waste. It's just duplication. But that, I think, is fitting with the Rambam's idea that a person always has questions. It's true. It's true that it's hard to explain. I can't explain how this could happen, how the staff could turn into a snake. But the fact that the person can't explain it, and the fact that it sort of leads you in a certain direction, is not absolutely convincing. Therefore, there's the miracle. More than you see with regard to Mitzrayim too, you had 10 matzos. The quantitative factor is an important element in the establishing the veracity of miracles, because each one in and of itself is true, but there's a certain element in the mind that maybe it's a coincidence, maybe, because it's an indirect phenomenon. You're making a certain deduction. You're filling in a certain blind spot, and of course when you fill it in, it makes sense to assume that what this person is saying is true, that it's from God. But you're not absolutely convinced, because you don't really see it yourself. The point being made that we see that the Egyptians quote-unquote duplicated some of the osos, some of the makos. Now, what does that mean? That they also have the power to change nature? No. And the Mepharshim learned that they were acting with magic. It was magic, which only creates an appearance, but it's not what Moshe was doing. Moshe was doing with a real Shina Hateva, a real change. Nevertheless, the fact that they could do so was sufficient to enable, to assist Pharaoh in denying the truth. Even though, if you compare the two, you would see the difference between what Moshe did and what the magicians did. Therefore, it shows you that a miracle lends itself to a certain deniability. A rational individual would come to a certain conclusion, but not everybody's rational. The way it's structured, it leaves a little bit of room for doubt. It's not absolutely convincing. To make it clear, again, getting back to the point that Moshe Rabbeinu came to the Jews with three signs, not just one, that indicates that the miracle in and of itself is not that convincing, that it doesn't leave any room for that. And the fact that you have a quantitative factor, the fact that it can be duplicated, and also in different realms. One is with regard to the staff, one is with regard to the skin, and one is with regard to water. And each one is like a different aspect of reality. That adds to the idea that there is some being who has this kind of control over the forces of nature. Bear in mind also that the main reason for following Moshe Rabbeinu was the person himself. There's an individual that there's another that you perfect the individual with tremendous wisdom, and not from charlatan. Who just, for whatever reason, we can't account, but somehow or other is connected to some kind of miraculous phenomenon. The miraculous phenomena go together with the character of the individual. And it's important that a person should have this in mind, not to be carried or swept off their feet by an appearance of something. No matter how convincing it may seem at the moment, let's see, you don't know. All the strange things happen. According to the Rambam, miracles were needed to establish the veracity of a Navi. And basically there's only one case where in the Torah, according to the Rambam, where a Navi establishes credentials to the miracles. The only case really is Moshe Rabbeinu, because the others did not engage in this kind of thing. The others never operated in miracles. The others operated through Chachma. They taught mankind about the falsity of Avodah Zarah, and they directed them towards the truth of Avodah Zarah and the correct way to serve God. But they did not resort to any kinds of supernatural phenomena to back up their case. That reinforces the point that the essence of Yadus does not maintain that people ought to be brought around to the truth because of the supernatural, by the power of the ideas, the logic, using their mind. That's the methodology that they use. And God performed miracles for them, but God did not perform miracles for them in that context. The only time, according to the Rambam, that miracles served this role was with Moshe Rabbeinu. Because after the Torah was given, there were many Nevi'im. But the reason why we have Nevi'im is because of a parish in the Torah, that's a mitzvah, that God, in his providential relationship with these people, will provide Nevi'im, will provide prophets, to guide the people, to chastise the people, to instruct them from time to time. And there's a mitzvah of the Torah to listen to the word of the Navi. That's Tzivei Hashem. And the Navi, but that has to be a legitimate, authentic Navi, and the manner in which he's established as a Navi is dictated by the Torah. Who is a legitimate Navi? Who's not a legitimate Navi? And according to the Rambam, he does not establish legitimacy through miracles. And the reason why, he just has to conform to the requirements of the Torah. He's defined as a Navi in accordance with the Torah. Once he has that definition, whatever he says in the name of Hashem, if it's a command, if God is commanding us at a certain point in history to do something, so then we're obligated to accept it as a Dvar Hashem, and upon pain of death. And anyone that rebels against the word of a Navi, according to the Rambam, we do not ask a prospective Navi, somebody comes forth and claims that he has a Navua. We don't ask him to perform miracles. We do ask him, as part of the test of his credentials, to predict future events. He has to, the Rambam talks about this in his Akdama to the Pirush on the Chayyim. And in other places, but that's the main place where he discusses it. And it has to be proven to be true in every detail. It's not a vague general thing, but it's got to be specific. It's got to be something which is in the future, which is really, there's no way that you can know. And it's got to be specific and correct and with regard to every detail. And if he is wrong in his predictions, or even in a particular, then he's defined as another sheker and he's put to death. This is a very, very serious type of phenomenon. Because you can't corrupt the whole institution of another. However, according to the Rambam, he's never asked, if he passes that test, he's not asked to perform a miracle. Because the reason why we believe him is not because of miracles. We believe him because there's a parsha of the Torah, the command is to follow the words of another. And if there was no such parsha, if there was no mitzvah, then we wouldn't accept anybody. We would just live in accordance with the Torah. And if somebody came along and claimed that he had special powers and special messages and did miracles, we would ignore him. Because there's no way we live in accordance with the Torah, and if the Torah did not contain a parsha about the Navi, so then we would say we're not interested in the book. We already have God's will. God has revealed his will to us through the Torah. People don't have that idea clearly, because you see, a lot of you here today, there's always cases of somebody having special powers and making predictions and all these different types of things. And there's this, when somebody says over some idea, some explanation in the name of some rebbe or whatever, and you challenge it, you question on logical grounds, and you enter a discussion, and then the other person can't defend it logically. So then there's that recourse, oh, you know, you're talking to this person is a Baal Mofes, you can find signs, and so on and so forth. You claim both through the individual's authority. As if to say that if that is the case, first of all, the answer is that if the person has to form any types of
miracles, which means supernatural phenomena, it should be done publicly. The fact that there's a rumor about it, I mean, there's no verification, renders it absolutely meaningless. Secondly, it wouldn't make any difference. If an individual were to come here today with some kind of an idea that we should do this or we should do that, or an explanation of Torah, some concept, and it didn't make sense, it was not logical, and any person who knew Torah would be able to refute it. And then this person would try to establish the credibility through performing some kinds of signs and wonders. It would not add one iota, but if something was false, it's false. And the fact that the person would do something which we couldn't explain, which would appear to be supernatural, would not in any way, shape, or form affect our behavior. For anybody to be influenced along those lines, that would be absolute key in the Torah. That's exactly what the Rav Maimon is saying. After Maimon Har Sinai, we cannot be affected, we cannot be influenced in any way, shape, or form by miracles or anything that would be appearing to us as miracles. Bear that in mind. We reject the Jesus, we reject Christianity, whatever the thing was. Whatever that claim was, whether Jesus actually held the idea of Christianity, or that was what they made it up later and projected it back on him, is irrelevant. If somebody were to come to us and say that we have to accept these ideas, the Christian ideas, and of course we reject it. And then that individual were to perform miracles, meaning changes in the order of things that we could not account for in a natural way. So what would you say? Oh well, if that's the case, we have to follow this. Well, we would be, this would be a test. But it is the possibility that such a thing would occur. The Rambam discusses it. I don't know that it ever happened in history. I know that false religions have developed in history. And you see this type of a way of thinking that affects the sitting down to get there among Jews. But you can't argue with him because he's known to have performed oaths or signs or miracles or whatever. He has special powers. But the Jews today don't reject that notion that they can attribute special powers to people. The guy, well, I've repeated that many times, there is no difference. But there is that sense that if a person has those powers, then somehow it gives credibility to his ideas. That's completely false, according to the argument. I don't know of a case in history where somebody tried to impose false ideas through the performance of miracles, other than that the rumor circulated that this person has the ability to. That's rumors. But in terms of really performing it in a public way, that would be the case that the Rambam talks about. If another Shekhar were to come and to try and dissuade us from keeping the Torah, and he would say, what should we do to you? We have the Torah from God. And he would say, no, this is God's will. And we would say, well, how do we know? Give us a sign. And he would perform the most devastatingly impressive miracle. Bigger than Kriya Shamsa, bigger than... The Rambam talks about this. And what would you do? We would absolutely reject it. Because we're not interested in miracles. We don't believe in the Torah because of miracles. So that we're going to now compare the miracles you perform to the miracles that Moshe performed, and then we'll decide who to listen to. That's exactly what the Ramban is saying. One of the reasons that the Torah is established on something which is beyond a miracle, an ordinary miracle, is to make it, to establish its veracity in an absolute way. Intellectually speaking, you know that it's the truth. If you know that it's the truth, then there can't be change. And therefore anybody that would come to you with something which contradicts the Torah has to be filled. Because you've seen with your own eyes in Torah. It would be the same situation would be when witnesses come and report something to you. You didn't see the event yourself. So then you're going to, you have to follow what they said, basically. You have no choice. Assuming you're credible, assuming you're going to have a lot of witnesses. But if you were there, if you were there and you witnessed the event itself, like the space shuttle, doesn't it?
Let's assume that that it really crashed. But they're trying to keep it a secret. So they're going to have television and but if they're trying to keep it a secret, so they're going to tell the people that it took off in the time and the way to space and whatever, and they'll work out the details later. That's the story. So all of the conspiracy now, all the witnesses that were there are going to make up that story. So now, if you weren't there, and all the people that report, that report, so then you'd have no choice. You have to go along with that. But look, you're there, and you start crashing into the ship, as you are. And now you have hundreds and thousands of witnesses are saying, like, is there any way that you would give any credence to what they're saying? Because the only time you give credence to the report of a witness is because you yourself do not have any knowledge, any independent knowledge of it, so then you have to go with a certain level of acceptance. And then you decide, well, are they credible? Should I believe them? Shouldn't I believe them? Whatever the case is. If it turns out that it's credible, then you'll accept it. But you'll never do so in a situation which is counter to what you yourself know to be true. Unless you just feel the power of your mind. What I'm saying is that our relationship to Torah, that the Torah comes to us from God, and it's the will of God that we keep the Torah, is based on our knowledge. It's based on our knowledge, and there's no way that anybody can convince us otherwise, no matter what miracle you perform. It would be if you were a sinner. If you were a sinner yourself, and you heard this from God, God commanded you to keep the Torah. So now you know firsthand that this is the will of God. So 5 years later, if an individual were to come to you and tell you that God communicated to him that you shouldn't keep the Torah, would you believe that person? Would you believe that person? You couldn't believe that person because your own knowledge told you that God wants you to keep the Torah. You were there. You heard the record from God. So you wouldn't believe it. Now, let's say he's doing both kinds of miracles. Would that increase your belief in what he's saying? And how would it increase your belief? What difference do you make if it's an impossibility? What this person is telling you is something that your own knowledge tells you is an impossibility. So therefore, you wouldn't believe it. You say it's impossible. So what you're telling me is impossible. You say, well, what about the miracle? How is that? So I don't know how the miracle comes about. That's what he's saying. So then you would not be able to explain the miracle. The other Raman says, the only explanation would be God's presence. If indeed it is a miracle, which can't be explained in terms of any kind of human power, and would have to be subject to something beyond, so then God's presence is the test. And that's exactly what he's indicating. But it's impossible that what this person is saying is true, because I heard directly from God. That's in the next. Question is, what is it about Sinai that differentiates it from all the other miracles? Any possible miracle that a person could develop. And the surface of Sinai also seems to be miraculous times. The description of the mountain, that the mountain was consumed with a fire that went all the way up to the heavens, and then thick clouds and smoke was enveloped in thick clouds and smoke. All these things seems to be miraculous phenomena, the sound of the shofar, the tremendous sound. What seems to differentiate it is that above and beyond that, this was all the context for a voice from heaven. A voice from heaven is communication. There is a supreme being who actually now has manifested himself through the direction, through commanding us in mitzvot and ideas. A being of supreme intelligence who is directing, is addressing himself to us. That's the step beyond the miracle. Because the miracle is just a strange phenomenon which we can't explain. And it points in a certain direction, but it leaves a certain room for doubt because it doesn't answer the question. It's not direct. It's sort of the you know, you come to a place and you see what looks to be a design. You're not sure. Here's that one. Some kind of an excavation, or you know, like you come to this place in the middle of the forest, and it appears that there's a design, that there's an artist over here. But you can't explain that. You can't explain that. You're not absolutely convinced. But then you come into a, you discover a secret room, and you see this individual, and you see he's involved in painting, and you go, those paintings correspond exactly to what you saw. Now you see, you now see it in front of the rest. Beforehand, it could be this, it could be that. You're not really sure. It's not absolute. And that's the same idea we do. We have to go by the account in the Torah. This is what the Torah says. That is to say that the entire Jewish nation was gathered, and they heard a voice, and they were... We can't get into the issue of how do you know that this voice was from heaven? Maybe it was just a loud voice. We can't get into that issue because the entire nation, the group that was gathered there, was convinced that it came from God. They say that openly, they in fact appeal to Moses that they really couldn't take anymore. There's 2,000 of them. So that's something that you can't entertain any other possibility. You have to go by your sense of things. You can't deny. If you deny your own senses, then how do you know you saw anything? The important thing is that they saw something which convinced them that this was from heaven. That's the basis of the whole thing. What they witnessed then was that there is a being beyond this universe, and that being is a being of Chokhmah, and communicates with us, has complete control over the forces of nature. In other words, man was associating the cause or the source of the miraculous phenomena together with the being, with God. And in the other cases, you have miraculous phenomena. So therefore, you have to make the deduction of what the source is. These were phenomena that couldn't be duplicated by any person. If they could be duplicated, they have no value. These were phenomena that could not be duplicated. So now you're seeing phenomena that you can't account for. So either you could just negate it and say, well, I just can't explain it. Or you could say, oh, Moshe is saying that this is a demonstration of the power of the Supreme Being that brought the entire system into existence. But they didn't see that themselves. That's a deduction. And since it's a deduction, it leaves a certain amount of room for that, the deduction. But in this situation, you have the miraculous phenomena, and the cause addressing you at the same time, so now you see clearly that's where it comes from. Here's the phenomena, and here's the being who's responsible for the phenomena, talking to you and telling you that this is the reality of the situation. I am the Lord your God. I'm the one who took you out of Egypt. I'm the one who's responsible for all the phenomena that's supernatural, that's beyond nature. Now you're seeing the phenomena in conjunction with these thoughts. Who's communicating with you. That's why you're not making a deduction on it. Bear in mind that it's a very important detail. In all of the signs that Moshe performed, they all indicated, they all pointed in the direction of a supernatural being. So you could ask the question, why? Well, maybe Moshe is a powerful God. Why should I be the God? Now, Moshe has the ability to do it. That never came up. Paro, who rejected the message, didn't say, deify Moshe. But the mind rules that out. Any intelligent person has to rule out the idea that a human being can perform miracles. That's absolutely absurd. The reason being is because everything that exists that we can comprehend, that we're aware of, is a part of the system. It comes into being as a result. It's a product. Every animal is a product. Every individual is a product. So anything that exists only because of the system and is a product of the system only has the capability that can doubt it by virtue of what the system provides it with.
And therefore you wouldn't expect to find the board. That's why. I mean, the person looks for such an idea, he says it's absolutely insane. So where's this board going to get to? The board is not the author of its own abilities, it's just to the planet, it's human to being, because something else is on you. The absurdity is that when it comes to a man, which is no different, it comes to being as a byproduct of a system. So therefore he's been designed by something beyond himself, unless you want to maintain the eternity of the universe. But which of course, if that's the case, he certainly doesn't have any, there's no such thing as supernatural power. Therefore, it's absurd to say that that man can perform anything outside of the natural powers that he's endowed with. So man has intellectual powers, he has physical powers, whatever the case may be, but none of these things point to any capability of being above nature. You can't be above nature. By definition, you are coming from nature. You are nature. How can you have entertained such an idea of being above nature? So where is it that people come up with these ideas of people having supernatural powers? That's because of human egotism. It's this Superman phenomenon. Because people fantasize about such a thing. If there wasn't this human ego and this tremendous need to feel this domination over the system, then nobody would have such a crazy idea. So the only people that maintain such a thing, that a human being who's just a natural, is a product of a system and is endowed with natural abilities, can have anything other than natural abilities, is an absurdity. And that's why you reject the idea that Moshe is doing this thing. He's a human being for you. So therefore, it must be that how can it change? How can the natural processes be changed? This is the order of the universe. How can the order of the universe be changed? Well, if you maintain that the universe is eternal and the way things are the way they have to be because that's the way they are, that's the way they have to be. That's the eternity of the universe, then you can't have a change. But by definition, that's the reason why a thing is the way it is because it has to be there. But if you maintain that the universe has been created, that it has a creator, that the way it is, we find it now, is not because it has to be that way, because there is a being who wills that it should be this way, and he has absolute control over all of the different forces within the universe, and that being can bring about a change. That's what the whole point of the miracle is. The point of the miracle was to establish that the natural order of things, the way things are, and finally, is not because it has to be that way. It's because the Creator willed that it should be that way. And he has the ability to make a change. That's the concept. And that's what a miracle points to. Is how do you explain it? Now, you could say that no, that we're learning something new about the universe. You could say it's not a miracle, it's just something that has to occur. But we don't, until now, we've never seen it, but we don't know everything. We don't know how the universe is functioning, so how do we know that the universe is at a certain point in time that the waters are not going to stop? That's something which is the only argument you can make. There, the answer is that if that is the case, that if there's something which is completely unforeseen, completely unknown, but it's natural, it's not supernatural, then the question arises, how did Moshe Rabbeinu know exactly when it was taken? That's the role of another. That if that were the case, then Moshe Rabbeinu is no different than anybody else. And yet, how did he know that this event would occur in conjunction with the saving of the Jewish people, and then as soon as they came out, the waters would come back and destroy the Egyptians? They could see that it's functioning over here in accordance with a different set of causations, which it has to do with the will of the Supreme Being. But the main way that we know it is only through Moshe Rabbeinu. By the way, that's basically the rationalization. One of the rationalizations that probably is that these things happen once you've been the law being done, when they were democracy. When they wanted to rationalize and deny it, so they would say, well, so we don't know, once in 100 years these things happen. Yeah. But that was denial, because if that is the case, how could it be that it was precisely connected to a specific event with regard to the Jews, and that Moshe Rabbeinu predicted it? The difference, a person can easily see the difference between magic, and a miracle. And it's not because you ask the magician and the magician will tell you the sleight of hand. It's simply that every magician, you can tell when magic, when there's a magic show, because there's a certain distance that you have to maintain. They never, you get a team of scientists, they're a team of scientists to examine any one of the illusions that are performed, or the best magic trick. A team of scientists know three actors. To see, to be behind the curtain, to you give them free access, let any illusionist or magician have a group of other magicians have completely free access. You cannot maintain any kind of control. Every magician maintains a certain type of control over the environment that he's in. Keeps the audience at a distance, and so therefore the curtain goes around, and as soon as it comes up, it's a line, and the girl is done. So to you, you can't. But there's a trick. So if you insisted on these conditions, then no magic could exist. They never would allow it. They never would allow it. So the same thing with Tara. Why did God give Moshe Rabbeinu a sign which could be duplicated? Well, you read the passage, you see, Balakayim. They did this with their secret devices and in a magical kind of a way to create a certain appearance. And then his snake swallowed their snake. So that if Paro really wanted to, if he called in the magician because of a scientific interest and establishing whether they could duplicate it, he would have discovered that it's his magic. But the reason why he spoke to the prophet is that he hardened his heart. Below Shalom, he hardened his heart. Why do you have to harden his heart? If he had refuted Moshe, by virtue of what his magicians had done, so why did he have to harden his heart? The answer is because he had to harden his heart, because if he would have been completely honest, he would have seen that what they were doing was not the same thing that Moshe Rabbeinu was doing. And I maintain that that's the case, that every time Moshe Rabbeinu did a sign, it was something that was in the open, that there was no secrecy to it, there was no magic associated with it, as opposed to all the magic that we know throughout history is exactly that magic. At the end of Shemitah Perakimim. Lefichach Amarad Hanavi V'yasa Otos Enosim Gedolim. He's saying after Sinai. After the foundation of our belief is not because of miracles, because we saw it on earth. And therefore if a Navi were to arise and perform signs and great signs and wonders, and he sought to refute the Nevuah of Moshe, he wouldn't listen to him. And we know of a certainty that those miracles, those signs are belot v'kishachim, that they're done with some type of a sorcery or magic. The teaching of Nevuah Moshe Rabbeinu ain't al pi osa, because the Nevuah Moshe Rabbeinu is not based on signs. To be shenarach oso zeh li oso zeh, so that we would weigh, we would compare these signs to those signs. Ela v'yaneinu re'inua, what we saw with our own eyes, would be as name Shamanua. And we heard it with our ears. Shamanu, to Shamahu, just like Moshe heard. Kolamaha Davagana, what is this analogy? Through the Aden Sheidu Adam of Davashiravinero. It's the same thing as two witnesses would testify to a person about something which he himself witnessed with his own eyes. Sheino Kimoshe Ra. And they would testify that it didn't happen the way he saw it. And no shamayelah, he didn't listen to them. El yodei abavadai shehenei besheka. He would know for a certainty that they are false witnesses. The tirach amar Torah, therefore the Torah says, shimba otziyam ofes, that if the sign and wonder actually does come true, this person does perform the sign and wonder, lo sishma, el divan av Yahu, that you shouldn't listen to the words of this nabi. That this person is coming at you with a sign and a wonder, to negate that which you saw with your own eyes. Behold, the inner manim of the mokes, and since we don't believe in the wonder, in the miracle, elam ben a mitzvah, because we've won a Moshe, but we only believe in another because of the mitzvah. Moshe commanded us, that's part of Torah, that in the future, if another should come, you should follow him. to the Rosh Hashanah Sefer and Iyur Rosh Hashanah. How can we operate on the basis of this sign and wonder to refute that which we know to be true because we've seen it with our own eyes? The Rambam in the Talmud to the Jewish on the side makes the same point. He's talking about a prophet who commands us to do something which is contrary to the Torah. We should not even attempt to verify his claim to prophecy. This is why he's speaking in the name of the Avodah Zarah, or that God wants us to worship a certain idol, or whatever, something like that. We should not even attempt to verify his claim to prophecy. And we should not ask him to perform a sign. Even if he did perform amazing signs and wonders as proof of his prophetic powers, he still must be silent. We should pay no attention to the signs, because the reason these miracles came about is, quote, that Hashem is testing you. There's a prophet in the Varan. Christ in the Varan, if you came in the Varan, if you come to Jibbuk and Navi, or call in Shalom, the Nasan or Asa Osa Mosa. And he's talking about that Navi should arise and give you a sign or a wonder. And the predict at a certain time, and then the sign would come true. The Moses, the Shabbat Rebbe Leimar, concerning which he said to the Neocha Akhlei Elohim Akhlei, Ashallah Yadatam Ben Arjan. But his message was, had to deal with idolatry. O Sishma El Dibre and Navi Ahur, do not listen. To this Navi Ahur, call away Machal and Hoki, Men Nasa Ad Hashem El Akeh Kam Aspen. That God is testing you, Lord Das, Ayishchem El Havim, Ad Hashem El Akeh Kam Machal Avachem, Ad Hashem El Akeh Kam. That this would be a test from God to see whether you love God with all of your heart and with all of your soul, which means to say whether the foundation of your amuna and the veracity of the Torah is absolute. The way the Rambam explains it in the Hakamas of the Pirush on the Shnayis, which seems to leave open the possibility that such a phenomenon could actually occur. And of course, all the other religions try to have reference to some miracle. If this one did or the other one did. And of course they don't really have anything because they can't bring any proof. Because there's no case in history where anybody did a public miracle which convinced the entire people that what they were witnessing was a miracle. All the miraculous stories attributed to Jesus or Muhammad, whatever it is rumors. It was never publicly verified. Yeah, they didn't say it, they walked on water, but you don't have anybody testifying that they saw it. So this has never really occurred, but even if it was, the underlying premise somehow is that if they could convince you that he did these things, then you'd have to follow him exactly what it said. Even if it was confirmed that he did this, but he flew. They flew around the world and came back and landed on a seat. It would be meaningless, it would have no effect whatsoever. But then you've left the question of how can it be? If it would be something that you have to assume is a miracle, like you have to rule out magic. I believe that that's what the Torah says. That if, of course, first you would check and you try and get all the magicians together to show that it can't do. But even if you couldn't do that, and even if the magicians did not attribute it to any kind of magic, it would be meaningless, because we would say it's coming. So the idea that there could be something which we would have to view as miraculous phenomenon associated with the attempt of somebody to dissuade us from Torah is something that could arise in the framework of the text. I don't know of any case where it actually happened, but that's the Torah saying, and that's what the Rambam is saying. This is why the Torah was established on a foundation which is not miracle. Which is direct, as direct as is possible for the human mind, for the human being, to come in contact with the source. A direct confrontation with God's Bible. That's what the idea is all about. Once that's the case, that your knowledge of Torah is direct, it's not based upon anything extraneous, so then you're in a situation now of someone who's heard from the commander himself, so to speak. And the other people are testifying that the commander gave different orders. Now, as I said, normally if you didn't hear from the commander, so you have no choice. You have to listen to those who claim to be witnesses. But when you heard the commander yourself, you were there when he issued the orders,
And he said, don't attract, so nobody can convince you otherwise.
And I want to make it clear that the objective of Mahmoud Hasinai is two specific objectives. Of course, they're connected with each other. And one is to reveal the existence of God. Not just the existence of God, but the fact that the Torah is from the third level, to affirm the divine source of the Torah. Now, something which is intricately connected to that is the phenomenon of Moshe Rabbeinu. That is to say that God did not reveal the entire Torah on Har Sinai. He just revealed a part of it, the Esaras HaGibra. And we have to go into it, we have to make a study of why, what's so unique about those 10 ideas, the 10 Gibras, which constitute more mitzvahs. These are the major foundations, major headings, whatever you want to say. It's an extremely significant portion of the Torah. It's contained in the Esaras HaGibra. But it's not the entire Torah, as you all know. So therefore, what was also essential was that the source of Torah is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the Torah is going to be transmitted to us via certain individuals. First and foremost is Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore the authenticity of Moshe Rabbeinu has to be established, because everything that's going to be revealed to us is going to come out from through Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore the ultimate authenticity of the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu was also established at Sinai, and that is stated clearly in the pasuk. It's a very crucial pasuk. It says, "Nei Anochi Bo Elecha Bi'Av Ha'anan." This is the pasuk in which God tells Moshe the manner of the revelation. I'm going to come to you in the thickness of a cloud. Ba'avur Yishma Ha'am Be'Gavi Yimach, in order that the people will hear when I speak to you. And also implies that it's not the only idea, but it's an integral component. Also in you will they believe forever. Now, there's a number of ideas over here, but the essential ones are the people will hear. The people will have first-hand knowledge which will come about through their senses, through the mechanism of their senses, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the Creator addresses mankind. And that's the first idea. So therefore we know that there is a Creator, first and foremost, that there is a Creator. We know that the Creator is not removed, is not aloof from the creation. Well, many names for the Creator are removed, that God is aware of what goes on in the universe, that it's got to, so to speak, concerned about how people should live their lives, and perhaps more significantly, maybe the idea of prophecy, that God communicates in a manner which is knowable to us. Those are some of the ideas. That's Torah. Torah is the natural life. But there's another significant aspect, and that is how did God transmit his ideas to us? That's the mechanism of the ruler, the ruler, and not everybody's a number. So this is to authenticate the ruler of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it's not only with regard to the written law, it's to authenticate Moshe Rabbeinu with regard to everything and every aspect of the revelation, which of course includes the oral law as well. And the olam means not just Moshe, but all those who come after Moshe. That Moshe is going to establish the system, the Balei HaMasorot, those who are authorized to transmit the Masorot. The system that Moshe Rabbeinu establishes, because you have to have such a system. You see why these two are necessary, and one idea follows from the other. If you accept the fact that the written law, so to speak, the source of the power, is from God, then you're obligated to accept the authenticity of the so-called Torah Torah, of the oral law, because it's impossible to decipher. It's impossible to understand the meaning of the Torah of the Prophet without recourse to the system of interpretation. All of the ideas, all the explanations, what this stands for, what this means, or what is the chart on the Okoligatha, what is the stone. None of the laws in the Torah are spelled out with any type of specificity. There's no way that you can possibly figure out the will of a Kaddish Rabbi. You can't figure out the system. You can never figure out the mitzvah. So it is clear that one idea follows from another. That if we assume, if we're convinced that at Sinai God was communicating to the Jewish people, of course, and ultimately to mankind, the system by which he wants people to live, and it's something which is capable of being understood and implemented, then there's got to be a body of interpretation, a correct body of interpretation, because the Torah of itself, by itself, in and of itself, is impossible to figure out. It's written in such a way that nobody can possibly figure out, even in a general sense, what it's referring to. It's not a self-contained unit, as opposed to sometimes an author writes a book. Some people write more specifically, some people write more clearly, some people write less clearly, but if a person has any clarity whatsoever, you can more or less can figure out what he's saying. And you can say, well, I've got the general idea, I don't know exactly every aspect, but I got 80%. That's true, you read an editorial in the paper. At least you know what the person is saying, you may not agree with the person. But you read the Torah, and in that way too, that all of the various texts, whether they're in Judaism or they're outside of Judaism, Christian texts, that limit themselves, essentially they're all united in one thing, the rejection of the Torah of the rejection of the oral law. If you limit yourself just to the Torah of the just to the written law, then there's, virtually an infinite amount of possibilities. You can screw it anyway you want. And you have absolutely no way of knowing what you're talking about, whether what you're saying has any validity whatsoever. So you can put the law, and therefore there's no objective has been achieved. The objective that the God is communicating is working mankind has not been achieved clearly solely through the means of the law. So that's why you have to assume that at the same time, God communicated the proper way to understand. And that, of course, we have. But you go back from generation to generation, those very same sources that communicated the written law to us have communicated the oral law to us. I've gone a little bit further than the question. The question primarily was addressed to the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu, that the ultimate validation of the Nebuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. And more than that Moshe Rabbeinu is the selected instrument. Not necessarily just in this case or in the other case. Not necessarily when we let the two guys in Christ. But that in all cases, that Moshe Rabbeinu has been designated by the Baruch to be the spokesman. This is what God tells Moshe Rabbeinu to pray. That both Tiachar to Om and Israel, Tavdun as well as Mahar, how is that? Alright, now the question is that if that is the case, that it was the will of God that the people should have direct knowledge of the fact that the Torah comes from God and that Moshe is designated the spokesman. So, if that is the case, so what about all the future generations? Because I'm going to argue that you can say that I'm good that's the generation that actually witnessed it. And many people, if they had reason there, had even witnessed such a thing, as described by the Torah. Then, of course, we would draw the proper conclusion. This would remove all doubts from our hearts. And our belief would be complete. Now, if that is the will of God, that our belief in the Torah should be based upon this type of a knowledge, so what about all future generations? What is the basis for the belief of the generation that we're not present as Sinai? That's the question. Now, in the divine, the Torah commands us not to forget what we saw. that this event was orchestrated and brought about in such a way that it would be not limited, it wouldn't be limited just to those particular people that saw it, but it would provide the basis for all mankind throughout all of history to be able to ascertain that the event occurred. This idea is mentioned in the Gemara. And that makes a lot of sense. But if you say that God's return is fortunate for that particular generation, but what good would it do if it was limited just to that generation? And the Pasuk itself says, "V'gam b'chol yamim yom yolam," that they'll believe in you la'olam. So therefore, it's necessary to assume that God did it in such a way that we would have knowledge of it, that all future generations would be able to know that this event actually occurred. And once they know that this event actually occurred, so then they'd be in the same position as those who actually witnessed it. They would be in that position through their knowledge. Now this idea is stated in Devarim. Okay, let's take a look at Devarim. Look at Devarim, Perek Daled, Tes. After it mentions that God is our Yisach Maskam, Yisachem, Yisachem, this is your Chachma, your discernment, in the eyes of the nation, they'll hear these statutes, they'll hear about these laws, and they'll say, Rak HaFachim HaNavon, Adar like that. Then you get a test, Rak Yishana Lecha, to guard yourself, Yishmor Nafsh Kamar, and guard your soul very much, and Kishkach HaKadvarim, Asher Ro Einecha. Lest you forget the matters that your eyes saw, Yishan Yosuru Mubavcha, or lest you remove them. You allow them to be removed from your heart. You lose touch. It's more than just forgetting. It's losing touch with the ideas that lead you to this conclusion. You have to teach them to your children, and your children's children. The day that you stood before the Lord your God in Torah, then Morah just sent a line, and God said to me, Hakel li yasa ha'am. Gather unto me the people, Vashmiyin Nesavara. And I'll let them hear my words, that they only learn, that they should learn the Yira Osu, Kalayamin. And so forth. Then it goes on to describe the event. And your days, and God spoke to you, Mitzotha Eish, from the midst of the fire. Then he told you the covenant and so forth. One second. The idea that the Jews are obligated to study this aspect of history, and that if you study history properly, you will be able to establish beyond a doubt that this event actually occurred, is mentioned over here in the book. These are the prisons. Take a look at Dalad Lama Bay. Tisha Alma Yaman Rishonim. Ask, inquire about the early days, the beginning. That's a reference to studying the history. Asha Hayu Lefanecha, the days that existed before you came into being, studying history. Yimunayom Asha Baro Otim Adam Alarot, go back all the way to from the very beginning of time. We're going to say Asha Mayim, that's Say Asha Mayim, from one end of the heavens to the other end. So, check the history of the entire world and see whether this phenomenon ever occurred. Haniya, Hagavar HaGadu Azeh, has this great thing ever occurred? Oh, HaNishma Kamoni, or has anything been heard like it? So, compare what we're studying over here and see whether anything of a similar nature ever occurred in the result. Hashoma Am Kol Elokim, here's the key thing. Has a nation ever heard the voice of God, Megdaber Mitzotha Eish, speaking from the midst of the fire?